The Hypnotic Beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals it is once again Thursday at 10 p.m. and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston, Texas, devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on listener-sponsored, volunteer-powered 90.1 KPFT Houston. I'm your host tonight, Greg Audell of GPA Productions, and every week, along with co-hosts Drs. Hank Rubicek, Warren Holloman, and Mary Edgerton, engineers extraordinaire Nicole Rochelin and Lisa Moore, syndicator Alondra Mejia, and, as always when I'm with you, Floyd the Wonder Dog. We celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on journeys through worlds of their own experience, invention, or unique spin, and with personal stories that stretch the mind, spirit, and heart. My guest tonight brings a smile to my face because I relate to his storytelling journey. It was almost 2 years ago that I first took those nervous steps onto the Moth stage to share a story that I thought was worth telling, and I discovered not only was it a lot of fun, but I was pretty good at it. So I take particular joy when I see a brand new storyteller step onto that same stage and absolutely knock it out of the park, as my guest, Sean Zhu, has done both times he's performed Houston's Moth Story Slam. Sean immigrated from China to the United States with his parents when he was six. He spent time in Louisiana, California, and New York, but fortunately for us, he has called Houston home for the past 20 years. He is a proud graduate of Cornell University with an MBA from Rice University. He's pretty smart, I'm telling you. Sean currently works in the oil and gas industry, but is aspiring to become a personal financial advisor so he can pursue his true passion of helping others through teaching financial literacy. I am all about following your passion. He is a self-professed full-time geek. Sean enjoys spending his spare time gaming, both computer and tabletop. So, Sean Zhu, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you, Greg. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, we've been trying to get you on since your very first story because you just blew us away. But I got to ask you, when you say tabletop gaming, what is that?
That's basically board gaming. You know?
Okay, so not cards or casinos or anything like
not
that.
Not casinos. For a card game, sometimes.
I bet you'd be a good gambler.
I actually hate gambling. When I play
games,
then
you wouldn't
though,
be a good gambler.
Yeah, when I play games, I like to take risks. But when actual money comes involved, no. No.
Well, as a new and successful storyteller, when did you start thinking, you know, I listened to The Moth for years and always thought I could do that. When did you start thinking you had a storyteller in you?
It was probably last year. I've always enjoyed sort of the social interactions, but I never thought about actually telling any stories until last year when I started thinking, you know what? You know, I listen to The Moth all the time, and hey, why not? Like, what's the worst that can happen? That's my favorite saying. What's the worst that can happen? So I just put my my name in the hat, and I got picked.
So how did you feel when your name was picked, and you had to take that long walk up to the stage and then out onto the stage, and we're looking at those 500 pairs of eyeballs looking at you?
It was pretty nerve-wracking at first. It was mainly just that sense of almost anxiety that's pent up, and it's like, okay, I got to go. But I've kind of learned to like that because...
And that's what I always say to our listeners. You know, if you step out onto that stage, you might have a few seconds of agitation and nervousness, but you're going to find real quickly that it's a friendly audience, and it is an exciting skill to learn that you have. And all of us are storytellers. We all tell stories in our daily lives. Now, many of the stories that we feature on our program stem from relationships, because I think those are often the most instructive experiences we encounter in this life. And none are more powerful than that of parent and child. And your first story is a testament to this. Sean, would you tell us your first story?
Sure, Greg. So, Greg, you know, would you consider yourself wealthy if you were asked?
No.
Not really, right? So I certainly wasn't when I first came to the U.S., right? I came here when I was six, right? I came here with my parents. My mom was coming here to study. So we were not very, very rich. We lived at the first place we came at was LSU. So that's where my mom got her bachelor's, and we lived at 870 Geranium Street. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that place, but shout out to that place. It was right next to the campus. At that time, we were living on a very, very small student stipend, and so our house was this handyman's dream, right? It had rotted floors. There was roaches everywhere. There was white paint that was peeling everywhere, right? But because it was white, we affectionately called it the White House. Right, and the reason for that was so when relatives asked, "Where do you live?" "We live in the White House." "Yeah, it's great, right?" But you know, as time passed, right, things improved. My mom eventually graduated and she got her PhD, right? And then my dad, at 40 years old, he went back and got his master's, so he worked very, very hard. And me, I played my, you know, typical Asian good kid role, and I got into an Ivy League university. So things were looking up because we were, you know, having income and we had money. But as that happened, I kind of lost sight of what was actually important in life. And it was sophomore year, and I remember I got addicted to EverQuest, which is this game. I'm sure the listeners out there who know about this game, they call it EverCrack for a reason. So I got addicted to this game, and I basically spent all of my sophomore first semester playing it, and I had a zero GPA. Well, yep. So I basically got kicked out. And I had to, you know, try to rehabilitate. And it was also during that time that I found out that my father was diagnosed with what ended up being terminal esophageal cancer. So that was kind of a big shock. But, you know, as I came back and I was rehabilitating off of EverCrack, right, my dad had really wonderful ways of teaching me these life's lessons. So I remember, you know, he had surgery, and the surgery had to remove half of his stomach, so he really wasn't feeling that well, and he couldn't really digest any normal food because he only had half a stomach. But then one of these days, it was towards the end of the summer, and I was about to go back, and he said, "Hey, Sean, you know what? I want to eat pizza." I was like, "What, like pizza? Are you sure?" And his favorite topping was Italian sausage. I was like, "Dad, are you sure you want to eat pizza? Because, you know, pizza isn't exactly the most gastronomically easy to digest food, right? And you only have half a stomach." He's like, "Yeah, I want pizza." I'm like, "Okay, all right, order some pizza." Pick up the phone, ordered a pizza. It was in the house within 30 minutes. And I just remember we sat down and we ate the pizza. I don't remember exactly what was said or what exactly happened, but I just remember the feelings that I had, this happiness, the joy as he was eating the pizza, right? Of course, I also remember the indigestion that my dad had that night. And unfortunately, that was actually the last time I had a sort of a meal with him, because after that, it devolved pretty quickly. And he didn't actually live to see me graduate. After that, I was able to rehabilitate, and I got back into Cornell. I was able to finish my studies. So I was very sad that, you know, despite all of this, he wasn't actually able to see me there. But he taught me a very valuable lesson, right? He taught me that being wealthy is not about money. Being wealthy is about knowing, hey, you know what? I'm doing the things that I love. I'm spending time with the people that I enjoy, right? Some people go through their entire life without learning that. He taught me that lesson with a $7.99 Italian sausage pizza, right? So the next time somebody asks me if I'm wealthy, I can absolutely say yes, because I know I'm living my life with passion.
Well, I think your father would be very proud, not only that you learned the lesson, but of who you are to have learned that lesson.
Yeah, it was. There's a lot of things that my dad did that I didn't understand then why he was doing it. But now when I look back, I think, wow, he was pretty smart. Definitely a lot smarter than I gave him credit for.
Well, there's a story that Mark Twain used to tell about when he was 19, he left home because his father was the dumbest man he ever met. And he, you know, wandered around the country for 2 years, sleeping in barns, getting whatever kind of job he could get. And he finally came home at 21. And he said, "I couldn't believe how much that man had learned in 2 years."
That's pretty good. That's a really good story. Yeah. So for me, a lot of my life decisions now, I realize how much of an influence that my dad had on those decisions. And yeah, it's just like I've gone out and I'm falling in the same sort of pitfalls that he told me about. And then once I climb out, it's like, you know what? My dad told me about that. I probably shouldn't have done that.
Well, I believe that he's still sticking close to you and is probably extremely proud of you.
Yeah, I would like to think so. I'd like to. keep his legacy going.
What would you like the listeners to take from this story?
I think the most important thing is that, you know, there's this emphasis on material wealth these days, and people tend to forget that the most important things are the things that are right in front of you. You know, the people that you spend time with, right? The Absolutely. Memories that you can create. And that's what being wealthy is about. It's not about just having money.
Amen. Well, I guess I'm going to revise my answer and say I'm a very wealthy man.
Yes, you are, Greg. You are very wealthy indeed.
I'm Greg Audell with guest storyteller Sean Zhu, along with our designated doers of everything, engineers Nicole Rocherlin and Lisa Moore, and syndicator and filmer extraordinaire Alondra Mejia. You are listening to So What's Your Story on listener-sponsored, member-powered 90.1 KPFT Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 91.9 for our friends in Galveston. Nicole? Oh, I'm sorry. That was for our friends in Huntsville, 91.9. Nicole, we know that our audience loves a good story. And many listening to us tonight might wish to improve their own storytelling skills. Do you have a suggestion for how anyone can become a better storyteller in Houston, Texas?
Well, of course I do. First, they have to take Dr. Hank Rubichek's class at the University
Amen.
Of Houston downtown.
Amen. KPFT internship.
Or his KPFT internship, yes. Or they can check out the Houston Storyteller Guild. They have monthly story swaps, and they are held on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. And they're located in the Stillman Lack Library at Congregation Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset Boulevard, 77005. You also can go to their website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. And also find all of our previous shows under the radio tab there. Also, to all of our wonderful fans out there, remember to please follow us on our So What's Your Story Facebook page to learn more about our guests and about the diverse storytelling community in Houston. We love to know what you're thinking, so make sure you like us and then share our page with all of your friends.
And seriously, friends, our Facebook page is growing exponentially thanks to the great team here at So What's Your Story. And, you know, we're meeting new tellers. We're getting new program ideas. So please do check out the Facebook page and please share it on your pages. We would really appreciate it because we are enjoying growing and we're enjoying meeting new friends. And it's wonderful having our audience grow. And the Moth Story Slam that you've heard us mention is another wonderful event, and it's held at the Warehouse Live on the second Tuesday of the month. March's theme will be Wonders. If you come out there, you will have a good time. And you can also check out the Houston Moth Facebook page for more information. And next Thursday, Dr. Hank's guest will not be able to be with us in person. John Green is an inmate in the Texas prison system who is also a writer and a storyteller. And Hank will have some powerful thoughts and writings from John to share with you. And I am very much looking forward to it. You know, we're glad to have our friends in Huntsville and around the state listening to our program. Now, Sean, you are certainly a well-traveled man. While every traveler I know has stories of a challenging journey, some of your adventures have certainly been a bit more than challenging. And one of these adventures serves as the seed to your next story. Would you share that story with us?
Oh, absolutely, Greg. So I asked you the question, have you been to Japan before?
I have not. It's on my list. My college roommate lives in Tokyo, but I haven't been there yet.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Shout out to Will Honeycutt if you're listening.
Yeah, so I've been to Japan, right? You know, Japan is a great place to be, right? Some people go there for the food. Right? Some people go for the culture. Some go for the, you know, can I say this on the radio? Go for the tentacle porn, right? But, you know, I was actually paid $25 to go to Japan. Tokyo, in fact. Yeah, it was really cool. So this was, you know, I was about 18 years old. And I was visiting China again for the second time. Hadn't been back in a long time. And so, you know, when you go back to China, you visit your relatives, and they're like, yeah, you know, wow, you've grown. I was like, yeah, of course I've grown. You know, it's been like 12 years, right? And then they say, oh, but you know, when I saw you, you were only this small. I was like, yeah, because I was 6 when I left. So definitely I was that small, right? But you know, despite all of these comments that you always get, it was really fun spending time with them, right? So my trip was over. It was about 2 weeks. It was over before I knew it, and it was time to come back to the U.S. And so I remember our flight at that time was China Eastern Airlines. So like never ride that airlines. China Eastern Airlines, right? And riding sort of a Chinese airliner at that time was a little bit different from airliners here. You know, whereas here most people are kind of quiet and tend to do what they want to do. You know, they keep to themselves. In the Chinese airliner, it was still smoking allowed, so people smoked everywhere. Whoa. Yeah, and then everybody talked really loudly. It was essentially like herding cats, just putting them all into this airliner, right? But anyway, so we take off and it's really loud and everything's going pretty well. And I decided that I needed to use the restroom. And I knew that was a bad sign because, you know, every single time something bad happens to me, I'm in the restroom. Right? It's never a number one. It's always a number two. Right? So, Greg, you remember the San Francisco earthquake of 1989, the one that interrupted the World Series?
Yes, I was watching it at the time.
Yeah, I was in the restroom at the time that happened.
So it's your fault.
It was my fault, exactly. You know, most people say during an earthquake, you have to, like, jump under the table or, like, a door sill or something. Well, I was squatted over a toilet. So it was like, okay, do I finish up here? You know, is the house going to come down on me? Anyway, so I was in a restroom here. And you know how in the airplane restrooms they say never flush paper down the little restrooms? But I had forgotten this. And I just automatically put one down there. And I thought, okay, should I reach down there and grab this sheet of paper? Because, you know, I'm not supposed to flush, right? It's just one sheet of paper, right? What's the worst that can happen? Well, the instant that I flushed, all of a sudden the plane just goes into a free fall for about a second. And then it recovers. And then so I'm on the toilet again. I'm like, okay, this can't possibly be happening again. So what do? I mean, in the middle, do I finish up? Do I run out? So I said, okay, I'm going to finish up, right? Because there's no point. And going out without my pants. So I go out and then it's dead silent. I knew something was wrong because these flights are never dead silent. It's completely dead silent. All the flight attendants are sort of sitting there with this ashen look on their face. I'm like, okay, like what's going on here? So I go back to my seat and then my mom looks at me and she says, Sean, if there's a fire, don't come back for me. So at that point I knew, okay, something really bad had happened. So what happened was the left engine had caught on fire and had blown up. And you could see the flames, or at least the passengers on the left side could see the flames. And I was like, okay, this is not good, right? And then luckily we had just taken off and it was only about 2 hours into flight. So we were going to make an emergency landing at Tokyo Airport. And so I was like, okay, you know, it should be okay. We can fly with one engine. And then as it's flying, I noticed that we're not really landing. We're over the airport, but we're just circling over and over and over again. I'm thinking, like, why aren't we landing? You know, we should be landing. And nobody's saying anything. So eventually I go to one of the flight attendants and ask her, okay, so why are we still circling? And she tells me, oh, yeah, you know, very calmly, might I add. She says, oh, yeah, don't worry. You know, we're only circling so that crash land, the chances of a fire will be a lot less. I was like, oh, great. You know, that's good. Less fire is good. I want to live. You know, living is important. All right. So eventually we let out all of the fuel and we're approaching the airport. And it's like out of this Hollywood movie. You know, you see those airplane crash movies. You look out the window of the airplane and it's nothing as far as the eye can see. Right. It's just sirens. I swear every single fire engine, ambulance and police car from Tokyo was probably at that airport. Probably a really good time to commit a crime in Tokyo because everybody was at the airport. Right. And then so as we're coming down here, I can like see this thing in my head. And as we're coming down, all of a sudden the plane just crash lands and there's a giant fire. And I'm the only person who's alive. OK, so that's the Hollywood version. Right. So what actually happened was we came in and then we just landed very safely. I know, it's not very exciting, but we landed safely. But the moment that we landed, Like the entire cabin just burst out into applause because everybody was so happy, right? Well, you know, everybody was so happy. And when they got over the euphoria that, you know, we lived, there was the problem of, okay, what do we do now? So we're here in Tokyo and it's really late. So apparently they couldn't book any hotels for us. I don't know why. And so we spent the night at the airport. And then to compensate for our near-death experience, China Eastern's like, you know what? You guys almost died. Here's 3,000 yen, which equates to about $25. So, yeah, we were able to buy, you know, like a bowl of noodles for that. And the very next day, they put us on another plane. It was also a China Eastern flight, and it was really loud and obnoxious. But, hey, you know, we made it back here safely, right? So from that trip, I figured, hey, you know, what really is the worst that can happen? My favorite catchphrase came from that trip. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Right? Because I mean, I've survived an earthquake. I've survived an airplane incident. Bring it, right?
That's a wonderful attitude. I like that. Although, you know, if I ever go anywhere with you and you go to the bathroom, I'm going to run like hell.
You better.
What do you want the audience to take from your story?
I think, you know, a lot of times people are afraid of doing things because they seem like it's out of their comfort zone or it's something maybe a little bit dangerous, right? But really, what is the worst that can happen? I mean, life is about living these experiences.
It's, right? I love the common thread that comes through these two stories.
Yeah, exactly. Life is about going out there and living and finding, creating those memories. And if you're always timid and not willing to walk out of that show, you never actually be able to experience anything.
Well, I can see why you were bold enough to walk out onto the Moth stage with such enthusiasm, because what was the worst that could happen?
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah, I get booed off stage. I get tomatoes thrown at me. That's okay, right? Tomatoes are vegetables.
And I've never seen that happen at the Moth. You know, but both times you've been on stage, it seemed like you felt so comfortable.
Yeah, because that feeling of anxiety, I've actually kind of grown to love that feeling because I know every single time
keeps you on your toes, doesn't it?
Yeah, every single time I feel that anxiety, I know that, okay, I'm not inside of my comfort zone, which means that I'm getting better, I'm improving.
Right. Well said. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we were talking before the show that when you walk out on that Moth stage and you see 500, 600 people staring at you, you realize you have to start talking, you have to keep talking. And, you know, you better have your thoughts organized. And I do think of it like being on a high wire when you're telling a story. You know, I don't read my stories because, you know, the story changes with each audience.
Exactly.
You know, with each telling. And I would never want it to be stagnant or tell. I don't want to recite a story.
Exactly.
I enjoy telling a story.
I think it's really hard to actually express actual emotions if you're just reading from a script. You have to actually sort of live that experience again in your
head.
Very
well said. I certainly do. You know, no matter how many times I tell a story, you know, I'm there every time. Who was the storyteller in your family growing up?
I think the storyteller in my family was actually my grandmother.
Really?
My grandmother on my father's side.
Was she in China or in the U.S.?
In China. So in China, I remember she would always read these stories to me. And then I guess, you know, when I was very young, my grandmother was the one who actually raised me from when I was probably maybe half year old to about two.
Oh, okay.
So I remember she would, I don't remember this, but my mom would tell me that she'd always read to me, right? And then, and that sort of created that impression in my mind.
Was it in Chinese or English?
It was actually in Shanghainese, which is like a regional dialect.
Oh, wow.
So, and that became a problem because when she told the stories in Shanghainese, I wouldn't learn any Mandarin. Mm. And so my mom didn't know Shanghainese. So when finally...
Wait, your grandmother knew it, but your mom didn't?
Right. So my dad was from Shanghai.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
So his mom, my grandmother, obviously just knew Shanghainese. And so that created a big problem because when I came back to Beijing from Shanghai, my mom had no idea what I was saying because all of my language skills, I had learned Shanghainese from my grandmother.
Do you still know it?
No, unfortunately.
Do you remember the stories that she told you?
I just very, very faintly. Oh. So it was something about, you know, heroes and, you know, just the typical stuff that you get told. Yeah, but, I, you know, that's always stuck with me that, you know, that those memories, even though you don't know exactly what's said, they stay with you.
Do you find that the ability to tell a good story helps you in either your professional or your personal life?
Oh, definitely, yes. So, for instance, in you know, becoming a financial advisor, right? A lot of times, it's very hard to illustrate a point by just telling them what
right.
it is.
Right.
Right. But if you tell a story, then it's like, oh, okay. Then you start thinking about the experience that they have. And it gets the point across so much easier than simply just telling them how something is.
I think that's well said. You know, friends, you're here with tonight on So What's Your Story with guest storyteller Sean Zhu, who's taken us on journeys of the parent-child type and far up in the air tonight. And if you like what you're hearing on So What's Your Story, you can always make a contribution online at www.kpft.org. And please be certain that you mark So What's Your Story as the program you'd like to support. Each and every one of you, and particularly each and every sustaining member of KPFT, allow us to share the stories and the unique and wonderful storytellers you won't hear anywhere else week after week. Sean, any closing thoughts that you have for our audience? I'm hoping that we're going to continue seeing you on the Moth stage and that we'll see you back in our studio again. I've loved the evening with you.
Definitely. This has been a wonderful experience. I've never done radio before. This is the first time. I got that same nervous anxiety. Yeah, when it was out there in the room, and but this is great. Yeah, every single time when I go to the Moth, I try to have a story.
Well, it was 2 years ago that I was in your chair for the first time, and I know what it feels like to be in there. But next time, you were wonderful, and next time you're back, you're gonna be an old pro at it.
Oh yes, definitely improve every time, hopefully.
Well, friends, I want to thank you for being here tonight, and I think you're gonna really enjoy Dr. Hank's program next Thursday night with the words and writings of inmate John Green. And I'll share a little bit about a unique friendship I had with Carla Faye Tucker, who was executed by the state of Texas February 3rd of 1998. So we'll see you back here a week. Scooter is next with the inner side to complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT. Make 90.1 a part of every day. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just taking a well-deserved break from the weight of the day, join us each and every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And ease into the weekend right. If you keep loving great stories, we will keep bringing them to you. And above all, be good to each other, my friends. I'm Greg Audell. And along with the fabulous team of So What's Your Story, we're asking you to remember that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace, my friends. Till next week.
Let the good times roll at the Woodlands Children's Museum. Your family is invited to get in the spirit of Mardi Gras with beads, masks, parades, music, and more at the museum's annual celebration. The fun starts at 10 a.m. Tuesday, February 28th. It's the perfect opportunity to explore carnival celebrations in New Orleans, Galveston, and around the world. The Woodlands Children's Museum is located in Suite 280, 4775 West Panther Creek Drive. For details, visit Woodlands Children's Museum.org. KPFT Houston.